Bruce is an armpit freak.
An armpit freak?
Yeah. Shambles.
We're up to Series 2, Episode 41 of the XFM Ricky Gervais Show. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
Zach, what's your Heat Magazine style headline for this show?
Which celebrities have had their balls done? You decide.
We decide.
Yeah.
Check out our gallery of scrotes.
Yeah, I guess
which
so.
Which one looks smoother, bigger, better?
Might be a before and after situation.
Oh, yeah. pretty low-key show, I thought, like in terms of effort and energy. They're just sort of sitting back in the pocket.
There was a lot of Carl making fun of Steve's looks.
Mm-hmm.
Reoccurring theme.
Mm-hmm.
And again, seems like Steve didn't appreciate it, particularly when Ricky joined in.
Nick on the Patreon says, I always find this one sounds off. The audio quality is really low and it almost sounds like a different show. Tricky to explain, but it just sounds wrong. The glitch during night swimming is also weird. Did you listen on Spotify?
Yeah. What was the glitch?
They went to a song and then it was really silent for a while and then the show came back. That's on the YouTube that I was listening to. Nick continues, one of my favorite quotes in this one, I'm going to do everything in my power to destroy you. That's one of those phrases I've tried to bring into my real life. Although I'd never have that many occasions to use a phrase like that, but I hope to.
Do you have any personal vendettas that you're fighting?
Yes, none that I'm willing to speak about publicly. No.
Just some people that you're wishing.
Oh, you know, I'm a regular.
Bad will towards.
Yeah, yeah, just in secret. In public, I'm saying, great job, way to go. But secretly, I hope they fail. But that's normal, right? Everyone feels that way. A bit of schadenfreude.
Sure. Well, we were talking about why people like videos of people falling over the other day. Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it. It's tapping into something deep. Louis on the Patreon says, Carl shares a birthday with Springsteen. There's a bit of a Springsteen chat with the baseball cap in the back pocket. 23rd of September. Carl turned 50 this year. We missed it. I was thinking that we'd do some big 50th birthday spectacular, but we miss it. And apparently it was Bruce Springsteen's birthday as well.
Isn't that a song by Earth, Wind, Fire, Water?
21st of December.
What is Earth, it again? Wind. I think I'm summoning Captain Planet.
Heart. With our powers combined, we will write a hit song, Earth, Wind and Fire.
21st of September.
Yes.
Okay, so 2 days off.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that that date as well, because there's that comedian on Twitter who does like a video about it every year.
What's that? What's the joke?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know how to describe it. Let's watch one. Actually, no, this is boring. I don't want to get bogged down in that. I was about to hit play on the song though. Let's enjoy a little bit of Earth, Wind and Fire. No, let's enjoy a bit of an ad for Adobe. We're already getting off topic. And we're 4 minutes in. This might be one of my favorite songs of all time.
It's pretty
good,
by
the way.
Introduce it like a radio announcer.
All right, now, all the way back in 1973, I assume it's Earth, Wind and Fire, September. 2 for Tuesday, Triple M rocks Brisbane. Hit the post.
He's a pro.
That is a game that I gave to a friend on a rival network on a drive show. But it's not original. Like, I have heard other people do similar or equivalent things. A game called Hit the Post.
Yeah, no, I've heard a few shows do this. Did you
really
come up with it?
Well, that's why I say it's probably not original.
The show in Brisbane at the station that you're on now used to do something called Posting Olympics.
Oh, okay.
In their podcast. And then they moved it to On Air, which was exactly that. You randomly get a song. And you're not looking at it, and you have to try to hit the post. Is that what yours was?
Exactly that.
Yeah.
It was just, let's see if you can stop talking and make it sound fluid right before the lyrics kick in.
You know a game I play? Have I told you this on the podcast before? Is when you know the bridge of a song?
Yeah.
Where it might just be like the drums or something like that. To like a big song. You know, like like Mr. Brightside, for example. There's a section 3/4 of the way in where it's just like the drums. And I like to do the speech that the band would do as if that's the last song. So, you know, like over the drums in the car, I'll be like, thanks for coming out tonight,
guys. Hang on. Let's do it. Let's Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
So the bridge, so it would be towards the end of the song.
Yeah, see if you can.
Like sort of the middle ends, just after the middle.
So like the lights are going off, probably fireworks at this stage.
The chorus, and it's got to be after this.
This day. Thanks everyone for coming out tonight. We've been the Killers. We've got shirts down the back. Make sure you get yourself a CD. If you liked us, look us up on MySpace. We're touring all around Europe.
Woo!
One more time.
I didn't see the Killers came out for the AFL Grand Final. I think it was 2017. They were the halftime entertainment. But then they do a thing at the AFL Grand Final. After the game finishes, they throw open the gates to the MCG. And I lived down the road. So I came in. And then the band does another show. And the winning team comes on stage for them. So I just wandered into the MCG and got a free Killers set. It was awesome. That's a much more original take on the Hit the Post game.
Yeah, well done. Don't you think bands always do that, though? I love that.
Oh, yeah. And they'll draw it out. They'll draw out.
And then really ramp it up, go back to the chorus for one last time, then boom, lights out.
Out. And then if you're lucky, encore. This episode was broadcast 7th of June, 2003. Number one in the UK chart, still Ignition by R. Kelly. Movies released the day before include Dirty Deeds, the Australian crime comedy.
What? I've never heard of this.
Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. I think it's the first movie inspired by an AC/DC song. Who's in it? Hang on.
I know Mr. Deeds by Adam Sandler.
This is the sequel. Brian Brown, Toni Collette, Sam Neill, John Goodman.
That's pretty
Sam
good
Sam Worthington. It's an all-star cast. I remember watching
comedy,
it.
Comedy, drama.
Australian gangster...
Oh, gangster.
In 1973, Sydney, an Australian gangster sees booming business due to US soldiers being in town for relaxing between tours to the Vietnam War.
There was a boom in Australian cinema. I think it might have been in the 90s, so a bit before this. Have you heard about this where there was a really significant tax write-off for funding films?
I think that's still going. That's why there's so much production here.
I think there's pretty good write-offs, but I think there was a time where it was... lucrative.
Sorry, that's when GST was brought in and the Aussie dollar crashed to like 50 US cents. And it hasn't regained a huge amount, but that's why The Matrix came out here and filmed here. Yes, I do know of the time you're speaking.
I wondered if this film was off the back of that, because we don't really make feature films anymore.
I always thought this is so
sad.
Not
like when, but as you said, like... Yeah, American stuff does get shot here.
Yeah, but looking at like people also searched for, you see movies like Two Hands and Chopper.
Yeah.
Like just great commercial Australian movies from that time, which do seem fewer and further between. But, you know, you've got recent successes like Heartbreak High and that sort of thing. Bluey. I remember like back in video shop days, the sad feeling of like anytime I'd see an Australian movie, it sort of felt like it should be in the foreign film section.
They were pretty low budget.
That's not to say there aren't some great Australian movies out there.
Do you know much about British films?
I know. I know a bit about British comedy films. Love the Cornetto trilogy. Love Alpha Papa.
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking, oh my goodness. I was at the movies the other day and I saw a trailer. I think it's called On Time or On Air. It's Mel Gibson doing it's Alpha Papa, but if that was a serious thriller.
What?
He's a radio announcer it's extremely similar, not the exact same. He gets a call that someone's got his family hostage.
On the line, official trailers, hang on. That's a whole sub-podcast we could do, is like movies and TV shows about radio. On the line, official trailer starring Mel Gibson. Let's just get through this ad.
It's Alpha Papa, but serious.
So you've watched this already?
Sorry. Yeah, I watched the trailer in the cinema. I wanted to cut it with Alpha Papa.
Relax. give me a call. This is On the Line.
Are you ready?
I'm always ready.
We're expecting your calls. Talk to Elvis live on air and tell him about Elvis. All of your issues and problems.
Another day. So it's like a talkback, late night talkback show.
If it isn't the greatest radio host. Okay, we got Gary on the line. What say you, Gary? Gary, you with us?
I'm going to do something really screwed up tonight.
That's the best sounding phone line I've ever heard.
Does the home belong to someone you know?
No.
It belongs to somebody not very nice.
And I'm going to take out his whole family.
Gary, what was that?
I'm breaking into the house.
Hey, Gary, stop. Wait, come on. Why hurt his family? I mean, they're innocent. You're better than that, Gary. Tell me calmly. Where exactly are you?
I'm at your house.
Honey.
Who's that? Right, okay.
Tonight, I've gone out of my way to make sure you spend the worst night of your life. See, I've created a game, and I think you're going to love it.
It's kind of like Saw, but in a radio studio.
It reminds me of Phone Booth. You see?
Yes, yes. I think they just shot the whole thing in two rooms.
I reckon this has got to be a Blumhouse.
Yeah.
Movie. There, the whole thing is like limited locations to save money.
The call's coming from inside the studio.
One call.
Still end well.
Scumbag. I don't want it to end well.
Can change everything.
I don't want to die here.
Well, if we don't want to die, we gotta fight.
Well, that won't be easy. Now I want you to jump.
Oh. I'll get this on top
of the truth. We're all listening.
Show yourself, you slippery son of a.
Carl could do a good
Mad world, don't it?
Setting him, inserting himself into that. He could be the caller.
Can someone do that edit? I got to admit, I'm hooked. I would like to see that. See how that plays out.
I would love also to hear on the line, aha!
Aha! He's a mentalist. Another movie released on the day before this show, Anger Management. Patreon business, we have a new content director. Evan Smoker, formerly an EP, has upgraded himself to be our new boss. Evan the Fire Smoker, welcome. Thank you for being our new content director. Got a A4-sized copy of the Carl's Childhood illustration on its way to you.
Are they getting around the world unbent?
That's a good... Yeah, one. The first one went to Singapore.
Okay.
Pretty sure that one made it. Second one, I can't remember. Third one was the giveaway. Yeah, I don't know. If you've received one of them, did it make it there okay? I am sending it in a rigid mailer.
Okay, good. I was going to ask.
So it should be okay.
We got any structural support here?
Yeah. let's get into the HX Series 2, Episode 41, The Ricky Gervais Show on XFM 104.9. In break one, Zach, question for you. Do you dismiss Bruce Springsteen as some kind of stadium rocker?
No. These times, boomer rocker, I might say.
Mm.
The Boss. I remember my dad having that conversation with me. This guy's named The Boss. I think that was the end of the conversation.
Thanks, Dad. some talk about Dannii Minogue, who hasn't released an album since 2007. She's been busy working the reality TV circuit here in Australia. And the UK, I think, a little bit. How would Carl describe Steve at a restaurant if he was going there to meet him? Big eyes. How would Ricky describe Carl?
Carl, I'd describe as, you know those little red monkeys that you see on wildlife programs? They're in the trees and they scream when they see a leopard or something.
I think so.
Shave that. Just right. Shave one of those little red monkeys and put some sort of, old sort of Manchester gear on it, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
An anorak and some baggy jeans.
Might be another drawing idea.
Yeah, he does have a bit of monkey energy.
Carl does.
Yeah.
In break two, they get into what is called the Hanky Code. The Hanky Code was a covert sartorial code used predominantly by queer men in the 1970s and into the 1980s. Simply put, a bandana is worn in one's back pocket for the purpose of sexual signaling. It's plenty out there.
So was this a real thing?
Oh, yeah.
But it would have an element of truth, but then... Like, I don't imagine the different colours and different pockets are indicating...
No, it does.
Oh, it does.
If you... There is an Australian musician, Brendan McLean.
Okay.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
He...
Not really, actually.
He released a music video for his song House of Air, which the whole music video is going through different codes and body language and stuff from a less progressive time where gay men had to operate more... covertly.
Well, before...
It's very explicit, by the way. Very not safe for work.
Yeah, like before you had apps and stuff like that.
Well, and also before it was just legal. Before yes, it was like...
That's true.
Yeah.
It would be harder to kind of find like people.
Color codes. The handkerchief code. It's all available. Yeah, no, it's a very much a real thing. Carl doesn't handle it in the most delicate manner. But as far as some other things he said, he is basically sticking to the facts.
I guess this is like a pre-Tinder age as well. Is there truth to the idea of like singles, grocery, supermarket nights? Have you heard of this? Where you'd put certain things in your trolley to indicate, you know, what sex you're interested in.
Did we talk about this?
No, I don't remember this. But it was like...
I'd be very surprised if I've had two different conversations. You talked about the peach, right?
No.
Who told me about the peach? Where you like go over and put a... It might have been Brooke. Maybe is it a thing that's on TikTok or something?
I don't know. Tell me. I haven't had this conversation.
Well, supposedly like you go and put a peach
like
in someone's...
Like these days?
Yeah, apparently. You put a peach in their trolley to go like, hey, I think you're hot. Then we just talked about the practicalities of that. If you like, you would have to be in on...
Well, the other person needs to know the code as well because they just might think, why are you giving me a peach?
Stop it. I've heard of, I don't know. I'm sure there's all sorts of things going on. When I was single, I was walking around supermarkets, like seeing if I would connect eyes with any attractive young ladies and just wouldn't have, well, not with any sort of, overt intention, but just like, hey,
you're aware.
Here's a place where people are.
Mm. Yeah. No, I've wondered that before, like, how you'd meet people.
Yeah.
That must be difficult.
It is.
Because
you really have
like
to.
Making that trend. Like, if you were at a supermarket and you started to talk to someone, like, how would you transition past hello? Like, it seems like, oh, hi, would be pretty natural. You could say hello to someone. And the next, any further than that would seem like, what?
At least there's items which can, I guess, be used as clunky conversation starters. Oh, Cocoa Pops, eh? Oh, yeah.
Have you had a meaningful conversation with someone in a supermarket?
I have a radio story about this, actually.
Yeah.
When my first, at the time, biggest fill-in was filling in on national late nights.
Yeah.
I had it first time with a producer who was also a friend. And I don't know why we thought this was a good idea, but it was something to do with, oh, I'm single. Where can you, like, unlikely places to meet someone. And one was, can you meet someone in a supermarket? So the challenge I was tasked with was going up to a woman in a supermarket, secretly recording with my phone.
This seems
all above board. And the opening line that we decided we'd use was, hey, and do you have any good recommendations for a dinner for one? And
that's way too sad.
That is the sexiest thing I've ever heard. Have my number. So I'm not good at talking to strangers generally in that sort of context, particularly unwitting strangers. My worst nightmare is doing vox pops.
Yeah.
People are trying to live their life and you run up and put a microphone in their face. But I was so worked up about this being my big chance and I had to do something. And my friend Matt, who was the producer, was like, it'll be fine. Because it would have been fine if I just didn't put it on such a, you know, pedestal, wasn't so wound up about it, that eventually I just did that thing where I psyched myself up that I saw someone. I went, hi, do you have any recommendation for dinner for one? And she said, are you serious? And I went, yeah. And just like looked at the ground, ended up having like a fairly nice chat. Never told her it was for radio.
And did you play it?
Got the content and walked away. It was a different time. It was 2012.
Was that legal then?
I don't know. I don't think so.
And that was Brooke. You happily live together today.
That's how we met. So that's, in terms of meaningful conversations in a supermarket, that's about as good as it gets.
No, see, I was thinking this yesterday because I bought a shirt from a shop and they were asking me what I was doing for the day. And I rarely tell people the truth.
Yeah.
I just give like a really general, oh, just working. Like, I don't know. Well, I just
here's
feel
a follow-up
like,
then. Oh, what do you do?
Bits and pieces. I just feel uncomfortable talking about my life to strangers. Is that weird?
I've thought about having a totally different answer. Like, I'm an accountant. But then I get scared they'll ask me a follow-up question that I won't know the answer to.
Or there'll be some type of accounting emergency that will break out.
In the immediate vicinity.
Is there an accountant here? We need to process some tax
quick. It's the last day for our Bass lodgements.
That's what my writing lecturer at uni, she was a screenwriter. She used to say she would say accountant at dinner parties because she was someone who, by her own accounts, liked to observe the truth around her so she could put them in scripts. And she thought if she said she was a screenwriter, that puts people on guard. So she would think of I'm not saying accounting's boring. She said it was the most boring thing she could think of. So it would have no follow-up questions and no one would suspect that she was taking notes under the table of all the stories that people were telling about
their
jobs. Or everyone, you know, bitching about the people in their lives. She was like, I'll take this down. And she had, you know, copious amounts of notebooks where she would observe the world around her.
I would have thought, my immediate thought when you said that was, oh, because she's embarrassed to tell.
Well, maybe that's a part of it.
Because that Brooke, my lovely partner, will often tell people and has in social situations who I don't know, oh, David's making a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I get embarrassed and squirmish because I'm a 35-year-old man making a cartoon.
You know when I said, I think that's it, if I think about it, if I say I'm uncomfortable, I think if I said, oh, well, I'm going to go sit on my couch and film some videos for TikTok. I think I'm embarrassed by that.
Yeah, I'm a homeowner. I have a child and another on the way.
Yeah.
I'm contributing to society.
Yeah. But I think even for cool things, like yesterday I needed a new shirt because I was doing a photo shoot. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It was like a proper photo shoot. But I was even embarrassed by that. I didn't want, like, I think I was embarrassed to tell them that. So I said, like, oh, just doing some work from home. Do you know, do you relate to that?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Hugely. Because I know people in my world and orbit who actually help people, you know, social workers and nurses and lawyers and that sort of thing.
Well, I think also the other thing is if you say, sometimes they go like, oh, well, you know, I have a radio show. Often the follow-up is like, oh, would I know you? Uh-huh. And I have to go, no, probably not.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a pretty awkward conversation.
Or people say, oh, I do a radio show. Oh, where? On Triple M. Oh, I never listened to that.
Yeah, or...
That's cool.
Or I've said previously when I was buying a car, I was really happy to get this show. It was a national radio show. This was like my life goal. And I went to buy a car and the guy's like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a radio announcer. And he's like, when's your show? And I was like, oh, 10 o'clock at night. And he goes, oh, well, we all got to start somewhere. And I'm like, mate, I've been working towards that for 10 years. That's like a good gig.
In your head, it just heard this sound.
Yeah, so actually, now that I'm unpacking it, I know why I keep it vague.
Yeah. On my cartoon, by the way, just saying that I'm embarrassed to talk about it, but I will. It's actually out now. The first episode, you can go and watch it right now.
And he will be embarrassed to say, blown up on TikTok.
Gone viral, baby.
Go check it out. It's really funny.
We've hit the TikTok Pokies jackpot. In episode 3, which comes out on Friday, There is a joke, a reference to a piece of Ricky and Steve content. Multiple pieces, actually. There is a reference to something that Ricky and Steve created. If you can identify it and email or message on the Patreon, whatever, Instagram, the first one I see who gets it right, I'll send you a free little postcard-sized Carl's childhood illustration.
Childish Dino on TikTok or Instagram.
If you already have that drawing, whatever the next one is, it is coming. I just keep putting it off because I've been busy. Whatever the next drawing is, I'll send you that one. So, in episode 3, what is the little nod to Ricky and Steve that I have slipped into the episode? There's actually two that I can think of, actually. There's two.
Okay.
At Childish Dino. Thank you.
How would you describe the... What's it like, the animation?
A bit of a South Park-y kind of ripoff.
Yep. I think it looks a little Rick and Morty in a way.
Little Rick and Morty in terms of some of the character
and
design.
Also the way that Dino performs is a little bit like the granddad. Like in the of like he's quite... Not in the same... Doesn't have the same characterization, but, you know, the uses their voice in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. He's not cynical or bitter.
He's
like
the total
Rick
opposite,
is.
Actually. He's
like,
very optimistic.
Yeah, intentionally, like very specifically the opposite.
I heard Dean say that the pitch was like, it was his childhood, which was quite rough, but he was blissfully ignorant of it.
Yes.
And optimistic about his future. Because it's a man's voice in a child who's blissfully unaware of...
Ignorant to what's
ignorant
going
of,
on around
some
him.
Of the challenges that are around
Yes. Because a kid, you only know what you know. You don't miss what you've never had.
But that sounds pretty heavy. It's a comedy that's very funny.
But the subtext is heavy, and we do try to chuck that in, particularly in the first episode.
Well, his uncle's
in jail. Yeah, it takes a pretty emotional turn right at the end, and I hope you enjoy it. So at Childish Dino, keep a lookout for the little Ricky / Steve. Not Carl, it's specifically Ricky and Steve reference in the third episode. Break 3. Steve overheard a heated confrontation in a park.
And all he heard on the phone was the guy saying, in very kind of earnest tones, "I'm going to do everything in my power to destroy you."
I just love that phrase.
Destroy. Is such a, like, what does that mean? I'm going to do everything in my power to destroy you. That's one of those things that you'd feel... There's 3 seconds where you feel like it feels really good to say that. And then about second four and five is when the cringiness comes in, where you go like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, or a follow-up question, how? Well, that could have been the guy talking to Mel Gibson on the line. I know you're a radio announcer, you just wait.
Have you ever had or heard of "You'll Never Work in This Town Again"?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a radio boss shout that in my face one night when he moved to run the radio station where I was starting out. So I was young and eager. Like that night where I went up to that woman in the supermarket, I was just so like, everything is important. This is my big break. I need to take everything so seriously. A new boss was flown in. And wasn't allowed to work for visa situations, but had a company card, so would take members of the staff out drinking, and he was a big drinker. So me, being eager to please, would keep up. So then late one night, we ended up at... It's always the third or fourth destination. Never go to the third location, I think, is a good party rule. That's what I'll tell my kids. Go to the pub and then go to the game, but then don't go to the third place or go
that's,
to the pub.
Close to in 30 Rock, that's Jack's advice to Liz. Never follow a hippie to a second location.
or eat more, I think, more appropriately than a game, because you can always go get a drink afterwards. Go to the party, then go to the nightclub.
Yeah.
Don't then go to a third place.
Yeah.
Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. So it was one of those situations where we were at a pub very late at night. There was only 3 of us left, including this new boss. And I was so drunk because he'd just been plying me with drink after drink. And I was like, yes, please, Can I have some more, sir? And I just got this in my drunk mind. Would have been very annoying. I acknowledge this. I was just playfully slapping him on the face. Not hard, just little like, because, you know, the conversation had ended long ago, whatever. The music was loud.
Time for the face slapping.
Time for the face slapping. That's what my drunk 23-year-old mind thought. So then next thing I knew, he had grabbed me and tripped me up onto my back, onto the floor. I thought it was a game. I was laughing. And he was pointing in my face, shouting, "You'll never work in radio again."
Wow.
And then he stormed out.
Was that in a capital city?
Yes.
Wow.
And then the next morning, I woke up still drunk to a very angry text
from the person.
From him. And so I can't believe you thought, you know, you could disrespect me like that. That was so whatever. And then I still drunk, but the next morning went, "I'm so sorry. I had no intention." And then he replied saying, "Oh, all good. Drunken misunderstanding."
Like hours later.
Yeah.
He replied
again.
So he was still drunk as well.
Yeah.
Going, "But you disrespected me." You replied drunk. And
no,
then,
so he texted that that night. I just didn't see it because I went home and passed out.
Yeah, you disrespected
then me. Then the next morning, "So sorry, did not mean it. What a disaster," whatever. So and he was like, "Oh, it's all good. It's all fun and games. We just had too much to drink."
Yeah, right, okay.
And then everything was fine.
So what
after
I don't understand about the how would that go well? Like, that seems like it would have set your career aspirations back. Not progress them, but you were trying to progress them by drinking with this guy, right? But mm-hmm. It seems like slapping him wasn't the right idea.
Like, hindsight's 20/20, Zach. At the time, that was actually the second time I'd done that. And
the slapping technique.
I'd done it to a friend once before, and my friend was like, "Don't, that's annoying." And I was very drunk. It's not an excuse; it's an explanation. So then, after that happened, I was like, "Oh, hang on, that's like that's happened twice. That must be a thing in my brain gets triggered where I go, hey, slappy, slappy. Awkward silence. I feel uncomfortable. Slappy slap. Like, this is playful." So, no, it wasn't. It wasn't a tactic to advance my career that I thought about ahead of time.
I didn't know it was going to go to slapping. I thought it was going to be
big
at 3
kiss.
In the morning, you'd start going heavy on, "Give me a job, give me a job, give me a job," kind of thing.
If only. If only. No, sadly not.
Although to know who that was after
he
this.
He did later give me a job and it facilitated me moving states time. So, yeah, he was actually quite good to me in the end. It didn't. Just a couple of slaps between friends and colleagues.
A finger in the face.
But so I
and an exclamation of, "You'll never work in radio again."
You haven't heard that or yelled that in someone's face before?
No.
One day.
I feel like that, you know, it's good to elicit some type of emotion out of a boss. I mean, you prefer you're going to take this company to number one. But "You'll never work in radio again" is a pretty good story.
Yeah. Do you? I think of that whole time and I cringe.
Oh, being 23.
Just being like new and thinking everything mattered and thinking everything was really important. Like, as I think of that, that's not the only thing I cringe about when I think about interactions I had with him. And some were, you know, very sober in radio offices about like how much potential I thought I had and how wanted opportunities and all that. And
I had already given up the dream pretty early. So when I started getting, it was reignited. And so I had a slightly different approach, but Dom, my on-air partner, definitely the idea of everything being really important. Early on, he definitely had that. And I remember, I certainly would have had that early. But I mean, at this stage, I didn't. Because I remember, have I told you about the Gary-a-thon?
Yeah, I think so.
Where it was like...
Remind me that.
The name Gary was... No babies were being called Gary.
Yeah.
So we ran a Gary-a-thon because we were saying the name's dying out.
Yeah.
So call up and dedicate a Gary. And so it was like we had like Mariah Carey's Miracles playing, you know, this like... And then people like this, we had a montage of phone calls and they're like, "I'm gonna call my firstborn Gary." We're like, "You're making a difference." But the phones at the radio station weren't working. So it all had to be pre-recorded the day before. So Dom spent hours getting this 5-minute segment absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. And then it came to play it out on the show. The song ends, and so he just has to hit play on this piece of recording. And he just had a brain fade and waited 3 seconds. So the song ended, there's 3 seconds of silence, and then he hits play, and his voice comes in and plays out the Garyathon. And he was, like, legitimately in a really low place afterwards.
That doesn't sound bad at all.
No, it's fine. That's what I was saying to him. I go, dude, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No one would have noticed. And he was in a really low place, and he's like, that was going to be it. That was – I go, no, I don't think he – under the, at that stage, he was – keeping in mind, he was 22, but he was working under the – actually, probably younger, probably 21, 20. He was working under the idea that, like, you could do one on-air break and a boss would listen to it, and that's what it took. Mm. Just hearing one thing, and they go, where are those guys? I need to get a contract in front of them right away. And I go, dude, I think it's like a more, you're chipping away at it. Like, we'll send that away.
You reach a critical mass.
Yeah, you can send that and you get on their radar. And then, to be honest, a lot of it is like, you're in the building. You are available.
That's the sad thing you do realize eventually. It's whoever's right in front of me and says they want to do it.
Yeah. You're already in the payroll system.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have to pay moving costs. Oh, man, that you think it's going to be. So Dom was thinking it was going to be like a comedian appearing on Carson in the 80s.
Yes,
where one good spot on Carson, and if he gives you the wave, if he invites you over to the couch, that is it. That's the Ellen DeGeneres. That's the Jerry Seinfeld. Yes.
Does that know any more, though?
No.
Is there anything where you could kind of go, not in one night? Is there? I don't think there's something that could happen.
Only
on
for
one
bad
night.
Things.
Yeah. Yeah, you could lose a career in 5 minutes.
Not good anymore. No.
Yeah, people used to get sitcoms off that.
Yeah.
Like you'd do a 5 minute segment on The Tonight Show and you'd get a sitcom for, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars.
It's where everybody loves Raymond, King of the Hill. Not King of the Hill. King of Queens, Seinfeld.
Those, sets as well. They're not groundbreaking. Like the 5 minutes they do. It's not as if it's the funniest 5 minutes you've ever seen. Yeah. Kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
At the time, though.
Yeah, I guess.
They might have never heard that observation about airplane food.
Oh, my goodness. The peanuts. Who are they keeping out?
Break three. No, we've done that. Steve heard a heated conversation. I imagine in a city like London, you would hear a lot of fun stuff because there's more people.
There's a lot going on.
Because I think of heated confrontations that I've walked past or overheard. Nothing really stands out, or nothing that where there's like a particular phrase that burns into my memory, like, I'm going to do everything in my power to destroy you. But
no, I can't remember that either.
Yeah. Break four. Here's a little bit of prep that made its way on air. They actually, Carl wrote a page of notes, these sort of content ideas that don't really make sense if you just read the list.
Oh, well, of Dr. Fox-esque music.
Wife,
topics.
Wet Ones, Screwball, Shop Train, Cheeky Freak, Ronan.
What was Ronan?
Is that like a list of your TikTok ideas? I imagine in your notes app you've got something like that.
Oh yeah, do you want to hear some?
Just one word. Phrases.
These are ones that I'm never going to do because they've been in here for years. I've seen someone do this, so I can't do this anymore. But there was something about Big Pharma, but farm is spelled F-A-R-M-E. So yeah. People are getting angry at Big Pharma. I've seen someone do that. Karl Marx in primary school. It was something about getting annoyed about a class system. You know,
that's good.
You know how classes get let out early and some don't?
Yeah.
Karl Marx was getting really upset about that. Mighty Ducks, but on Heelys. Walter Mitty, but on Heelys.
Okay.
Fast and the Furious Brum mashup. Do you remember that show Brum?
Yeah. These are all great.
Nah, I've looked into them. I can't do them.
What do you mean? What's wrong?
I can't.
How can you not do Mighty Ducks on Heelys? Feel like just good tweets from an account called the movie pitch guy.
Anyway, yeah, this.
I've looked into it. It's been a while since I've posted a new cartoon, but I'm just looking in my Toon Ideas notes to see if there's anything that makes sense.
Well, I related to this because I used to, when I did stand-up when I was in my early 20s, I would write out set lists like that, just a list of single words, because I was very paranoid of people stealing my jokes, which is extremely arrogant for a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of almost write the jokes in a code because I didn't want people finding it. But then I would forget what the joke was because, like, I would forget what my code was. So, yeah.
See, I had a friend who had his login details for the Silk Road dark web website in code. So if someone found them, they wouldn't necessarily make sense. I understand that. I don't understand 21-year-olds.
Well, because I was really stealing. I thought stealing jokes was, like, one of the big things that happened, I guess.
All the time, yeah. Yeah. Well, it does. It does.
I guess. But, like, I didn't. Oh, but I think the thing I was missing is that no one wanted my jokes. Like, everyone was like, I remember talking to one guy. He's pretty successful now as a comedian. He's made a career of it. And I remember talking to him in a back room because we both had a Where's Wally joke. And I was kind of, I felt so paranoid about it that I needed to make him know that I didn't take it off him.
Mm.
He could not care less. Mm-hmm. He's like, he was a few years older than me. He's like, yeah, man, whatever. Like, cool, you do it. And I was like, I just, like, we both have them. Like, I was like, I was going to do a Where's Wally joke. I was like seeking permission, I think. I was like, can I do it? He's like, dude, it's totally fine. We can both do Where's Wally jokes.
Do you remember your Where's Wally joke?
No. It would have been something about, like, a joke about finding. I don't know. I don't remember it.
Shame.
His was That's also one lost his to was the like comedy a prop ages. Joke. Like, he had, his was something to do. He had, like, a big, some, like, I don't mind this. People still do stuff like this, but, like, he had, like, a big easel, I think. You know, and he had some type of, like,
they, we grew up on opposite sides of the country, of a big continent was, country.
No, because everyone was copying Dimitri Martin. That's what it was.
Right. Yeah. When I was bouncing around open mics, there was always someone with the butcher paper.
I still like it. I still
Dimitri,
I still,
when it's done well, Dimitri Martin still does make me laugh. He does feel like he was very cool in the mid to late 2000s.
There was a time.
And now he is just back to being a very successful touring comedian. Oh, but you watch his videos, fucking funny.
I saw,
like, his cartoons.
I saw Flight of the Conchords recently, right? Brett McKenzie, who, like, they're the best.
Yeah.
You know, both of them.
Academy Award winner.
Have done, even outside of the HBO series, which was amazing.
Yeah.
They've done great work in other areas. But I saw him promoting his solo tour recently. He's doing a solo tour.
Brett McKenzie is.
And I don't know, it's called Serious Songs or something. And I'm not sure if that's ironic or not. I'm like, are they actually serious songs? But anyway, he's like doing little Instagram videos like, guys, I'm coming to, I don't know, Brisbane, please get tickets. Like, everyone has to.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, you're an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
You had an HBO show, but you still have to grind. You've
met Kermit the Frog.
But you still have to grind. But then they posted a picture of them in the mid-2000s on a New York street. It was a photo shoot they did. They're in kind of like, you know, very, their beanies and denim jackets. And they're in a, they've set up kind of like a lemonade stand, but it's for therapy. And that was like the conceit of the shoot. I remember seeing, they posted that as a throwback recently. I remember seeing that when I was 20 and thinking, those guys are the coolest people on earth and I will never be that cool. Like, not only are they funny, but they're funny in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And look how cool they look. Mm. And they're in the middle of the street doing a photo shoot. And they're kind of doing something that's like childish, but then also cool and is irreverent.
Mm.
And I was like, but now I see them and they're still cool and super talented and whatever, but I'm like, oh, but you guys are just people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when you're older, you're like, oh, when you're young, you put people so high.
Yes. Things are untouchable.
Untouchable.
That's why I have always wanted to make a cartoon, but it just, the concept of doing it has been, it's not even been something I've like thought was possible because it's like, well, that doesn't happen here. That happens, I never think of like people actually working on The Simpsons. It's this thing that exists away and above and is unattainable. And I think, used to think that about comedians, about bands. I think we've talked about before, like the idea that the Strokes would ever not be the coolest band, most relevant band of all time. That never entered my mind in those times.
It's a certain personality that I don't think we have. It's a certain self-belief. Or maybe just like...
I didn't think we're just kids who grew up in the suburbs and exciting things like that happened somewhere else, not in the worlds that we grew up around.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Anyway, deep.
You know, yeah, we keep...
Dave's crying.
Just let me sort myself out.
He's looking into the middle of the distance, tearing up.
Last little thing about Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
When you talk about their early days, like in New York, breaking out as a musical duo, comedy duo, I have burnt in my mind something that I watched after the two seasons of Flight of the Conchords, after they were world beaters, right up there with the Mighty Boosh in terms of cool comedy duos. Yes, because
they were cool. Yes. That was what was
very
different.
Very cool. I watched this thing, a live performance they did at some sort of showcase thing, some industry showcase in front of TV people. It might have been like the Aspen Comedy Festival or something like that. And they came out on stage holding signs saying, looking for a girlfriend.
Mm.
And they came out and they went up stage and went, oh, we're looking for a girlfriend. So we thought this could be a good chance to do it. Silence. And I just always remember that these two very, very funny people, and then they went and sung their song and then it started to warm up. Even the Flight of Conchords can come out and just bomb. But get back up. You know?
Was this recorded though before their fame though?
Yes. I
imagine. So it came out with, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so this was like, it was a big introduction. Like, hey guys, here's the next, you know, here's a cool group that we believe in, Flight of the Conchords, and they come out and the first thing they do gets crickets. And so I just didn't think of like the willpower to not completely freak out and then to like find your feet again and not walk off stage and go, that's it, I'm quitting. I'm going to go be a school teacher.
Well, I personally find their best stuff, in my opinion, is like the TV show outside of the songs. I never really got the songs. Not my thing, musical comedy. But like the show is incredible.
And would have cost like $50 to make.
The show?
Yeah.
What show?
Flight of the Conchords.
The HBO show.
Yeah. They're just on the ground.
You've got to remember this.
Always like one or two people.
6 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would have been cheap. Not $50.
No, I think it was $50. Over 6 episodes, I think that's
$10.
$6.33 recurring.
I forget what I was saying anyway.
Yeah.
They're great.
A toast to Flight of the Conchords. Have you seen
Two Little Boys? That's a recommendation.
No.
It's really good.
No, I thought that was going to be Hamish Blake branching out into films and becoming a movie star.
Brett McKenzie and Australian radio...
God.
And, comedian Hamish Blake do a buddy film set in New Zealand. It's a dark comedy about Brett McKenzie's character hits a backpacker in a car and needs some help from a friend to...
Uh-huh.
What to do next.
Is it Taika Waititi? It looks like a Taika Waititi.
It's not.
Movie.
It's okay. Very dark, but it's a comedy. And Hamish Blake's character, they're childhood friends, and Brett McKenzie wants to get away from him because he thinks that he's a little unhinged. But like that's how it starts. And then he needs his help, though. So he kind of connects with him. And as it goes on, you kind of realize how unhinged. Hamish Blake's character maintains like this boyhood, optimistic, joyful.
Oh, like Childish Gino.
Yeah, but then the stuff is like he's basically trying to hide a murder, and then there's some witnesses that come into it that he has to deal with. And it gets deeper and deeper. Yeah,
that sounds good.
It's good.
It's good.
I have shown it to people who didn't like it.
Okay,
but I think it was really good, and I really thought Hamish was great in it, and I thought Brett was great in it. I was like, oh, this is gonna kick on. And Hamish never did another film.
Amazing. Well, that's the end of another week of our podcast, Chat of the Conchords, covering all things Flight of the Conchords. Let's get back to the Carly Pilk boys. Where do you land on Ricky's pitch that if you knew you were going to die in your sleep, you'd live happily?
Yeah, maybe, I guess. I mean, is he probably reveals that he's thinking about his death? Does he need to be relieved of it, does he?
Yeah, I think this is still within the first couple of years after his mum passed away. Mm. which happened around the time The Office came out. So I understand that. Immediately when I first heard, I was like, yeah, that'd be great. You know you're not going to get sick. That's the big one.
Yeah, suffering.
You know, yeah, suffering. Slow, painful death. You know you're not going to get hit by a car or whatever. But then it occurred to me, well, then won't that make going to bed terrifying every night?
Thing. You'd start to get anxious about going to bed.
And then that would drive you mad and you'd end up miserable. But generally, I know where he's coming from. Like, my nan just passed away in the last couple of weeks. She was 93, died in her sleep, nailed it. I'm so jealous. But it's something that you can't really enjoy, I guess. You can't come back for a day, high five everyone, like, did it, not going to die of cancer. Yeet. Then go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Ricky remembers another thing that I'm always impressed by Ricky's recall of things that happened at school.
When we were playing pool in the office.
Oh, hang on, that's the wrong one.
Because when he was about 11, someone said, how would you want to die? Right? We do that thing, drown in fire or that. He said, I want to die of old age in my mother's arms.
How old was he?
About 11.
Loser.
That's a great fear, isn't it, in childhood? Of being vulnerable and being made fun of.
Yes. Kids can be evil comedic geniuses.
Yeah, certainly. That sounds like when someone's responded way too heavy to what was meant to be a trivial question.
Yes. Yeah, when you make the mistake of being too vulnerable in front of the wrong people. So what would you do on your last day? Steve would go full GTA. Let's just dabble in this area for a little while. You knew that 6 o'clock tonight, the earth was going to explode. What would you do? Oh, there's not real. You'd have to come up with a comedy answer because the real answer wouldn't be fun.
Spend time with my
family. I love you. Now eat this pill.
Comedy answer. Try to fly a plane, I guess. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Try to go bungee jumping without a cord.
I would like to fly. I have flying dreams occasionally.
Really?
Yeah.
Like not anxiety flying dreams?
No. I'm not in a plane.
You are just flying.
Free solo, baby.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
If you could just lucid dream in those moments, you would essentially
be
flying.
But you know the funny thing that happens sometimes is like you run, jump, and you start flying. But then sometimes I run, jump, and just land on my face. Like I haven't figured out the exact way how to fly yet. Like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You have way better dreams than me.
What are your dreams like? Anxiety I'm not saying dreams. All the time. Like occasionally I'll fly. Like maybe 3 times in my life I've flown.
That's 3 times more than me.
What are you, like are yours well, in memorable, reality? Memorable. Are you often, breaking the rules of nature in your dreams?
Not often.
Yeah.
No.
Occasionally I will. Not all the time.
Sometimes there's like aliens and stuff. Sometimes there's a bright light.
Are you in space?
And they're sticking something in my butt. I think I was abducted. No, in terms of memorable dreams, there's been times where I've dreamt about someone I know I'm not close with, but they're in my orbit. This particularly at school.
Yeah.
I remember having a dream about this one girl. And it wasn't sexual. It was just a nice dream who I didn't really know, barely an acquaintance, had like a class with her or whatever. And I woke up like in love with her for a day or whatever.
Here's a weird one is sometimes I would find, because when I was a kid, I used to find a lot of coins. I think I must have walked with my head down a lot. Like I felt like
deeply
finding,
ashamed.
I felt like finding coins was a part of my personality.
Really?
Like, I felt like I found coins on the ground
Zach,
more than
the
other
coin
kids.
Finder, Amanda.
Well, because in primary school, lots of kids are dropping coins, I guess, because they're like, I used to find money all the time. Anyway, sometimes I would have dreams where I'd find a gold coin, then another one, then another one, then another one. And it's not a lot of money, but it'd be like $20 worth of coins. I would wake up and it would take me 20 minutes to realize I didn't have that $20. And it would be genuinely disappointing. I would be sad afterwards. Like, oh man, I don't have that $20. But it's not as if $20 is a lot of money, but that would be really deflating. And I would, even though I woke up and I knew I was in my bed and I hadn't found the coins, that hadn't been connected in my brain, I would still have to come to the realization, oh, no, you don't have that money. And it was a real letdown.
That's disappointing. Do you ever go too deep on and fantasizing about what you'd do if you won the lotto, like an actual substantial amount of money?
No.
Like,
and then get talking sad about that you don't have it.
Yeah, I'll go too deep, and then when I'll snap out of it, I'll go, oh, fuck. That's right. This is my life. Talking about like what you do on the last day, my fantasy is often revolves around what would my first day be if I found out I won the lotto.
Mm.
Before you've got the money, but you know it's coming, what would you do? It always starts with booking the most expensive hotel room that I can find.
Well, you know, a sad reality of this, that's not a fun podcast answer, but I saw a cartoon, you know, these cartoons that you see on Instagram of like dinosaurs. Is there a famous person who does that?
Huh?
Yeah, like dinosaur cartoons. Is that a genre? Or is there a famous person? I feel like I see dinosaurs
every now and then.
Anyway, there was one recently when...
Far side.
There was one recently where it was about NASA knocking that asteroid's orbit off. You know how that happened recently? Was it Artemis or something? And so the cartoon started with a comet hitting the Earth and like a dinosaur comforting a little dinosaur. And then it's like, you know, whatever, 20 million years later... And then some dinosaurs are in NASA. They're high-fiving each other because they've diverted an asteroid. And they're like, this is for you kind of thing. That was the idea. But the first panel of the cartoon dinosaur mum or dad comforting the cartoon dinosaur child. And the child was like scared, was grimacing. And then in the background was a comet hitting the Earth. That made me cry. Like having a kid myself.
Yeah.
And so if I think, oh, if I knew the world was ending... The sad answer is, I guess I'd be comforting my child.
That is the sad answer. Well, we've all learned something today.
I'm actually tearing up now. Thinking about
it. If the world was ending, Zach would comfort his small child.
Yeah.
I have heard that when you become a parent, anything involving a child, it can be two cartoon dinosaurs, hits you different.
TV ads.
Yes, you've talked about that before, yes. Okay, let's get back to the show. Carl's dad used to steal shoes. It's another anecdote he throws out in break five. Rockbusters, did you get the first one? That one was gettable.
What was it? I didn't get any of them. And I'm impressed with how fast Ricky does.
That fella likes sucking on iron. M for Mary.
Metal... Liquor? Metal liquor.
Metallica! The Jamaican fella spots a boat. D, that's Debarge. Do you want to game me tug of war? Up to you. You own it. That's Europe.
I thought Europe. That one was pretty good.
Break six. Dr. Fox inspired amusing observations of the week's news. Carl offers. So that's put to Carl. Do you have any amusing observations of the week's news? And Carl offers chicken with teeth. And having your testicles done. I looked into both. The chicken with teeth was something to do with reverse engineering dinosaur chicken. You know, there's an overlap there.
Sure.
Anyway, whatever. But in terms of having your testicles done from healthline.com, there's no medically proven method to increase your testicle size. Testicles do not do expand temporarily during sex when blood is flowing to your genitals. Once you've climaxed, they return to normal size.
Good to know.
In break seven, cheeky freak of the week, the conjoined twins, Chang and Ang. Have you heard of Chang and Ang before?
Yeah, read their Wikipedia page.
Yes. Right, because have they come up on this show before on the XFM one?
Possibly. Carl talks about it. I've read a lot of Wikipedia pages.
You've gone down a lot of Wikipedia holes.
A fascinating life.
Well, I've got four unbelievable facts about Chang and Ang. They were both married and fathered 21 children between them.
That was one of the interesting things.
I've only got three of the four because the next two are pretty hectic.
Yep.
They owned slaves.
What?
After touring the United States and world, the brothers had a small fortune they could invest however they chose. They settled in Wilkes Barre, North Carolina, and owned a farm. At that time,
I did know this.
owning a farm meant owning slaves. It wasn't just a coincidental commitment to the Southern way of life, however. Both Chang and Ang's sons fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War. And the final one, Ang watched Chang die.
Yeah, that's dark.
The connection between Chang and Ang wasn't vital, which made it possible for Ang to watch his brother die. The full morbid story, including the subsequent plaster cast made of their bodies, is a tragic end to the duo's surprisingly normal lives. Chang had struggled with alcoholism and his health, while Ang was relatively healthier. That led to Chang's death in 1874, which Ang witnessed. Ang lived 3 hours longer than his brother, then died himself.
Based on
photos, they looked elderly. I suppose I could find that out for sure.
What a fascinating insight to alcoholism. I guess they're two separate people, so two separate people can have.
Yeah, they were only connected barely.
Does the effects
62.
On the, see, okay, not that old. Does did but like does the negative effects of the alcoholism on the body impact both of them?
I don't think they shared vital organs. So no.
But doesn't alcohol travel in the blood? Breath. Like I imagine they
shared blood vessels.
Is that how?
Oh right. So one drank, would the other get drunk?
Or sick? Or
I guess so. Well, if the healthier of the two died 3 hours after his brother, then there's probably some close connection.
Yeah.
It does say doctors still don't know why, though some suspect shock was the cause, which doesn't sound terribly medical or scientific. That could be another edition of how they died.
Mm.
Our other podcasts we're working on. Steve rages about dividers at the shops.
Thing to get upset about.
He would love self-serve checkouts.
Even his solution of just leaving a little gap. I'm like, just put the divider up. I don't get what the issue is.
Yeah. What annoys Carl? The concept of being at it all night. Which is used as a tease into the song, which is just brilliant radio craft. The gist of his issue with people like Sting and the concept of tantric sex is, he says, get it done right the first time. Why muck about?
It's interesting because he looks at sex in a very practical way, I guess, but then he doesn't want kids. Do you get what I mean? So those two things seem to be contradict, because you'd think, well, one would be having sex for pleasure, the other one would be having sex for a practical outcome of a pregnancy. But he seems to take bits and pieces from both and mash it together.
Even the pleasure has to be practical. Get in, get out. I've got stuff to do. Monkey news to read. And at this point, of course, it sounds like he's not even interested in sex. I mean, he's 30, for Christ's sake.
He doesn't have the energy.
He doesn't have the energy. Where are my slippers? Get off my lawn. Break 9, we get the Rockbusters answers. Break 10, monkey news from the Guinness Book of Records, where all good news comes from. The monkey, it's about the monkey with the most protruding eyes, which I googled. In Indonesia and Malaysia, the Western Tarsia has huge bulging eyes, making the head broader than it is long. It also has the longest feet and its tail is tufted at the tip. There you go. It reminds Ricky of an anecdote. Here we go.
When we were playing pool in the office, I think Lucy was your partner.
Yeah.
It was me and Ash versus you and Lucy. And you were having trouble because his glasses kept slipping down. So Lucy pushed his glasses up his nose, but the glasses touched his eye. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He started it.
Well, you're the one who joined in.
Of the three of them, I can only imagine Steve has the largest therapy bill.
Yeah, well, seems like he genuinely wasn't happy with his questioning.
Okay, bite of the joke again.
I think he, in some ways, he's not happy to, but I think he will go head to head with Carl.
Mm.
And then when Ricky joins in, I think that's the line where he's like, okay, mate, well, we make out Carl to be this guy who doesn't know what he's talking about, but you should know better.
The monkey news then is about a couple of monkeys that got married that Carl actually has the article for, which Ricky reads through. And in break 11, they wrap up the show. So that's it. Done for another week. Next week, series 2, episode 42. Didn't have time to look at what's on it, but I'm sure it's great. I think one of the YouTube comments said, one of the best ever. So let's go with that. That's next time on the Carly Pilk Boys. Zach, see you then.
Bye.
He said, I want to die of old age in my mother's arms.
How old is he?
I never lose it.